Hello and welcome to another episode of the Microsoft Spotlight Podcast. Today it's just me and the guest, and today I'm joined by Lilian Gorgieva, and hopefully I've got that name 100% correct. Can you just verify that?
Perfect.
Yeah, there we go. To be fair though, I also obviously asked the guest a couple of times to validate it, and also use LinkedIn as well, you know, the little button you can basically press to read your name out, obviously you've recorded, just to make sure I try and get perfect. But yeah, welcome today, Lillian, and just want to tell us who you are, what you're doing, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Andrew. It's a pleasure being here. I'm currently a software engineering manager in network analytics, working in AFO for Microsoft. Previously, I was in academia. I was also in a very innovative company in Switzerland. I was working for the European Commission and am continuing to work on a few of their initiatives supporting women in tech. And I have been very active in ACM Women Chapter. That is the Association for Computing Machinery chapter, which promotes women and engages with women to bring forward their careers. So that's me. What else would you like to know?
Awesome. So one thing we'd like to do in this episode is obviously start from obviously where you got your passion from to obviously start working in IT. So you want to start at the very beginning. What was school life like? Was you interested in getting into like an IT degree or anything like that?
Oh, excellent question. So I'm originally Bulgarian and I grew up in a very different time. I went to a language school, but I always had a passion for mathematics and I wanted to be a mathematician. So I entered Sofia University to study mathematics, and there everybody was from mathematics high school. So they were asking me why languages. But I have always had a passion for understanding difficult problems and solving them with technology. The technology came later. When I was a university student, we didn't have mobile phones and laptops weren't really a conventional thing as they are now. I then, after graduating the University of Sofia, moved to Manchester to do a PhD. And it was in Manchester where I first encountered issues related to diversity. At that point, my supervisor was female, German, and there were 14 people in our research group, and there were only two females. And I started thinking about the representation of women. At that time as well, in 2001, I went to Seattle to participate in one of the major conferences in artificial intelligence, which was hosted by Microsoft. And there, the topic of diversity was also brought up. I moved on to university career, and after about two decades, I decided to try something else. So I still keep my relationship to academia, but I now work for Microsoft, which was a longstanding dream of mine. I believe in not only understanding difficult problems, but also applying them to solve real-world problems. And there is no other company that does this at the scale that Microsoft does, in my view, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the stuff that obviously Microsoft released through like the roadmap and all the different conferences like Ignite and Engage or whatever they're called, but they're always basically releasing something that basically talks about an issue that a particular customer's had, and then how they're basically then bringing this new tool set that basically then, you know, eradicates that problem and is the next best thing. Doesn't always work. I mean, there's obviously a few things Microsoft have launched that then had to like reinvent over time. But yeah, Microsoft probably one of the biggest people in the world that basically look at human challenges and try and, you know, resolve with tech. So yeah.
Yes.
So with your like career history, then where did the IT part start coming in? Where do you think that, you know, I actually see myself working in IT?
Originally, I saw myself as a scientist, as a mathematician, but there is a very close relationship between mathematics, computer science, and IT. I specialized at university in logic and reasoning, and in Manchester, where I did my PhD, in automated theorem proving, which is essentially teaching the computers how to think. And we do that by using logic. So there is that relationship between fundamental theoretical computer science and practical applications. And these practical applications are as practical as we give them credit for. It could be anything. They could be a search engine or a chatbot. But underlying all those applications, there is that issue of correctness. And correctness is ensured only by logical specifications and proofs of these specifications. Because you wouldn't be comfortable to use a navigator in your car if you're not 100% certain that they will navigate you to the point of arrival. Even nowadays, this is not the case, right? Sometimes you may get misdirected, especially in the early days when there was sat-nav systems. There were a lot of stories in the press where customers were brought to another location. So this is what I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to ensure correctness of the program, the application, the representation, or the whatever challenge is in front of me.
Awesome. So what's a normal working day look for you then? How do you help customers take on these challenges and fix them with, obviously, you know, Microsoft technology?
It's a very good question. My role currently is a software engineering manager, so I manage people and projects. And in that aspect, I'm not as involved with customers. I'm involved with engineers. But my engineers work on interesting projects, which will hopefully benefit customers. And our customers are large telecommunication companies. So how do I engage within the organization to ensure that we deliver the right service? Well, Microsoft is a multifaceted organization. They have representatives for all roles. They have people who manage customers and customers' expectations. But I manage an engineering team. So I make sure that there is an alignment between the engineering understanding of the problem and the customer's expectations. And that's, for me, critical. One will always need to start with what customers want. It's only then that we can deliver a successful technological solution. So that's what I do.
That's pretty cool. So what's one of the biggest challenges, obviously, being, I mean, managing people is something that I never really ever want to do. I want to try and avoid that as much as possible in my career because I can just see it being an absolute headache. So what's one of the biggest challenges you have with managing these people and, you know, them and dealing with customer issues?
It's a very good question. People are very different, and finding the right approach to a different person is very unique and very specific to that particular person. One needs to find the right factors to motivate the team, and one needs to deliver clarity. That is one of the Microsoft directives for a manager. We are encouraged to model, coach, and care. And model involves modeling inclusive and correct behavior. Coach involves aligning with people and getting to understand their career aspirations and their values. And care is the default setting. A manager needs to care for their team and for their career progression.
So with your team dynamic, what is it? Is it mostly men, mostly women? What's the mix like?
In my current team, it's only men. I would rather say boys, but they really are men. The representation of women at the current organization is lower than the overall representation of women at Microsoft. It is very rare to have women in senior roles. We do have some women, and you have interviewed some,
yeah,
I hope, but they really are rare. And I know that in my organization, in Azure for Operators, we are working very hard to ensure that more women are represented. Now, having said that, and despite that I have worked a long time for ensuring that there are more girls in computer science at university, there are more women participating at the conference, there are more women speakers delivering technical talks, I would like to stress that what is important for me personally is to be viewed as a professional first and as a woman second. So if I focus on my work, I would like the professionalism to be the thing that differentiates me. At the same time, I know that it's very important for younger women in the organization to see that they are role models that they can aspire to be or that they can learn from. And that's what makes the representation of women, even in a larger organization, important.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken about it many times. It's like you need female leaders within the business to then be able to inspire the next generation of women that are coming into the organization to go, yes, well, I can achieve that. I mean, the example in my current organization, there's a woman called Carla Hall. She literally started with Fujitsu as an apprentice, and now she's basically one of the senior leaders within the business. So I think she's, what, four levels above me in the reporting chain. So you do always need that representation at the very top level, and even in levels just below as well, because as I say, in obviously your team, as you said, there's, you know, it's a team full of men. It's exactly the same in my team. It's a demographic that I would like to try and change with my line manager, but it's how do you tackle that issue? How do you get more women into a role where naturally women don't see themselves in that position? Do you know what I mean? So it's a difficult challenge. I mean, I'm going to ask the question to you. I mean, how do you see, you know, yourself getting more women into your team?
Yes, it's a good question. It's an issue that we're trying to address. We're trying to recruit more women, and that is only possible if we encourage more women to apply for our open positions. And this starts at an earlier stage. When I was working at university, we were organizing events that would encourage girls to pursue a career in computer science, because frequently what happens is they start the degree, some of them even graduate, but then they choose a different career path. And there are many factors because of that happens. Some find that the culture is very male dominated. Some find that the hours are grueling. Some have a belief that men are more technical and more technically adept. This is not necessarily true, but beliefs play a vital role here. So we start changing the beliefs by starting to address those issues at an earlier age. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think also within teams that obviously struggle to attract women, maybe, you know, that now obviously we don't have COVID, people can obviously then shadow other people's roles and get an actual feel for it as well, because I mean, they don't know what's there until they basically start getting on board, joining conference calls, listening to all the different conversations that may be had, and where they may even be able to add something to that conversation as well, because they may have a particular skill or an experience which will basically answer a particular problem or query. So yeah, there's lots of things that, you know, that needs to be done. It's very challenging to do so because, you know, I work as an architect, and say there's not many female architects that I've come across in my working life that I can think, yeah, you know, you're that inspiration. So therefore, I'd like to see you in an organization, in a position where people then can follow you into that business. So yeah, it's a difficult one, definitely. I mean, honestly, I would love to be able to, you know, find the correct answer to answering my team's issues and try and get more women involved. But yeah, I'm working with we have a thing in Fujitsu called the Women Business Network, which I'm heavily involved in. Working with them to understand how we can obviously change that as my team, as an example. And I said one of the biggest things is obviously, as you say, it's the working patterns. Even when it comes to like a job description, it's basically the wording that's the most important. We've said in this podcast many times that, you know, how a man views a job description versus how a woman views it, there's no comparison. You know, a woman will literally be very critical against every single item that's in there, basically. Like, I don't match against all these, so therefore I'm not going to apply. Where a male will go, yeah, I've done a little bit of that, or yeah, I can get through that, and then just basically apply to the role. I mean, to be fair, like, if I'm completely honest with myself, I did exactly the same when I applied for this role at Fujitsu. I looked at it and went, yeah, I can do, you know, most of that. So I applied for it and did my interview and did a presentation, and, you know, because I've got that experience of being in front of customers, I was able to basically get through, because I went from a consultant straight to an architect with no real experience in between. So yeah, it's a difficult challenge, and one I would love to be able to, you know, find the perfect remedy for in most organizations, but I don't think I ever will. I think the only way we'll do that is just having conversations like this and going, well, what have you done and what can I do, and try and find that kind of middle ground in between. So obviously Microsoft obviously are a big powerhouse, and obviously you're based in the UK, but obviously you're not originally from the UK. So how have you found like culture change from obviously everywhere you've been to working in Microsoft in the UK? Because obviously I've spoken to so many different people across the globe from different parts of Microsoft and different countries. So how have you found Microsoft UK?
That's a great question. So I'm fairly international in the sense that I have lived in various countries. I have lived in the US, I have lived in Switzerland, in Germany, a bit in France. And for me, the international mindset is ingrained. So for me, it wasn't a big culture shock. My team is also very international. I have people from all over Europe. My team is relatively small. I'm currently managing only 6 people, but they come from different countries. And I have an awareness that different cultures and different people from different countries have different needs. It's remarkable how different their communication style is because of where they come from. I gained a lot of experience talking to people from different countries while I was at university. I was fortunate enough at university, when I was teaching there, I was fortunate enough to have involvement in our international campuses, and I still do. And I worked with large groups of people. And from there, I learned that they have different needs and they need to be approached in a different way. And I'm using these transferable skills as best as I can. Of course, the role is different, the expectations are different, and the structure of the day is also different. But what you told me is really remarkable. I'm very impressed that you moved to an architect role. That is really incredible achievement and bravery.
I'm surprised as well.
And it's rare to see. So you can be a role model and an inspiration for some young architect. That's the other thing. In addition to culture, it is very, very important to have the right mentor and the right person to look up to. And as a woman, that's a challenge. Finding the woman that could be my mentor, or not necessarily the woman. This is something that has been a challenge for me. I'm very fortunate to be in a big organization where I have a lot of options, but still it's more difficult than if I were to be male, if that resonates with you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I say, my working background, I literally started as a IT apprentice. So I was working, when I first got my first placement, it was an absolute nightmare. I mean, I was doing an IT apprenticeship. They stuck me in this company that basically was a warehouse. I was actually in the warehouse on the workshop floor packing boxes. I went, well, this is not exactly achieving my dreams of being in IT. And then fortunately, I ended up getting moved there. And then my next step, I actually went and joined like a private hospital. So I did a whole year at this private hospital. And again, this is where the importance of a role model comes in. So the guy that was my line manager there, he was basically like my second dad. He was it was literally giving me the kick up the arse that I needed at times, because I was 17, fresh out of college, you know, bit of an idiot, was messing about. But yeah, he gave me the kick up the arse that I kind of needed and helped me, like, you know, realise my potential. And he's a guy that I haven't seen for quite a few years now. And I keep meaning to go over and sit and see him at some point, because, you know, I am internally grateful for, you know, what he did for me and my career. Give me the opportunity. But I like to think from that experience, I then took that into the rest of my career. and try to, you know, really push myself. So yeah, I've gone from doing nutty desktop work, doing some high level network support through like Cisco devices, into an IT consultant, doing implementations up and down the country, all over the place. So then, stepping into an architect role where I'm now having that high level conversation with customers, and I work with a lot of high profile people in the UK. So it is important to have that role model. I mean, it's quite a few years ago now, I actually got approached by an apprentice company. I actually went in and did a whole presentation about, I was you once, this is where I am at now. So, there's nothing stopping you from achieving it. And being in a room for a bunch of 16 year olds who I was once, not really paying attention. There was a few that obviously asked a couple of questions, but it's important to have someone come in and speak to you on a level that you understand. And that's something I kind of pride myself on. I try to be a social chameleon. And that I try and take that from my own heritage, because I've got a bit of Irish, bit of English, bit of Jamaican. So I try and blend into, different cultures quite easily. So I'll just look at a room and try and address them as professionally as possible, but also on the same level they might understand. So yeah, I can talk kid speak, I'm not that old, I like to think, because I was a snotty kid once. But yeah, it is important to have role models, it really is. And it's something that I'm trying to do within Fujitsu. I mean, I'm a part of this whole SharePoint site internally, where I'm actually branding on the SharePoint site as a person people can talk to about, Microsoft certifications, their career. I'm yet to have a single person approach me. Don't know why. I'm not that scary. So if anyone's from Fujitsu listening, please come and approach me and talk to me. it is important to have role models. It really is. I'd say Microsoft, obviously, have so many big players, big women that are basically, at the forefront of a lot of the events. I mean, obviously, I've had a few on this podcast in Karuna and Michael. So, yeah, we need more. And if you listen to this podcast and you are a woman that is in a high profile role, please don't be scared to look down the chain and go, I can help mentor that person and bring them up to, the level that you're at, or share your experience.
Absolutely. I have found everybody at Microsoft very welcoming and very supportive. It is difficult when one transitions at a more experienced level and is not a new hire, because there is some adaptation to a different culture. I came originally from academic background. I did have some experience in an SME, but the culture of Microsoft is quite dynamic, and the day-to-day life is quite intensive. So one needs a support system and mentorship. That is very important for skill development, for career progression, for staying informed, for being at the forefront. One needs a support system. That's what I have found out.
Yeah, I see basically Microsoft as an organization that, once you kind of join, you kind of got a job for life. I mean, obviously, I know we've had the Microsoft purge recently. There's a lot of high profile people leaving. And obviously, that's natural attrition. It does happen at times. There's, things change and, technology basically replaces people to some degree. But, so we are going to get a guest on in a couple of weeks' time, I think. She's been at Microsoft 30 years. So basically, the whole working life. She's been at Microsoft. It'd be interesting to obviously hear her story as well. But I mean, there's many times I've looked at myself and been, I would love to go and join Microsoft, but as I've said in this podcast, I just don't see where I'd fit currently. I look at the job descriptions and think, I don't know. That's the only time where I look at a job description and go, I can do the technical bits, but then it's all the other bits they're asking for. I'm not too sure, because is that going to take away from what I'm currently doing? And, I want to, this podcast, keep growing it and making it, bigger and better.
It's an interesting observation. Of course, long-term career is valuable And Microsoft is an organization that provides many opportunities for role changes. So one doesn't need to do the same role. And I have not heard of anyone doing exactly the same role in the same organization at Microsoft. And that's actually quite an exciting company in that sense, because as we learn and grow, we have more opportunities. And the wider the network, the more opportunities we have. So as long as you have a culture of learning, which you do, a growth mindset, which I'm sure you do, and willingness to learn and grow, Andrew, you will be a perfect fit. So I would encourage you to apply.
just need the right job title. Just need the right job title. Chief something, that'll do me nicely.
It's not so much about being a chief. Something that is quite interesting when one is a manager is that I feel in the spotlight, and your podcast is suitably titled Spotlight, because whatever you do, your direct reports analyze it. Sometimes they are careful for every word you say, especially when performance is discussed, for example.
Yeah.
And that's something that, of course, I'm used to from academia, because students used to do the same. But here it's the different level. And it's quite interesting to navigate sometimes.
Yeah.
One is always in the spotlight. As a woman, doubly so.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we spoke a lot about Microsoft. I want to talk about, obviously, some of the stuff that you actually do outside of Microsoft, obviously, the Women in Tech initiatives that you support. Because, as I say, I know you value diversity and supporting women-led initiatives. So, do you want to talk about the AMC Women Rising Star? Because this is a new... There's a lot of events in the UK where, obviously, they support women and so many award ceremonies. I'm trying to get my head around every single one of them, but there's so many. Will you want to tell me about the AMC one? Because I've never come across that one.
That is the Association for Computing Machinery, and it's the headquarters are based in the US. I co-founded the chapter here in the UK. But the chapter recognizes achievements of women in tech. And the award that we advertise every November is Rising Star Award. And the number of high quality applicants that we get is unbelievable. It is a very competitive award and it's quite difficult to get. And we are trying to be fair, because when you look at women scientists or women researchers or women managers even, the opportunities that scientists in well-renowned top-level institutions such as MIT, Princeton, or Cornell are significantly higher than the opportunities that women scientists get in less well-known institutions. The same applies to companies. So that is one issue that we try to address. We try to be fair, because to achieve incredible impact and to be recognized for your achievements, what is needed is resources and network, and bigger companies provide that easier. So we are trying to be fair and balanced and evaluate the applications based on the achievements themselves and not so much of the institution where they come from. As a body, the Association of Computing Machinery provides a lot of learning opportunities, a lot of training courses, some mentoring events, and is also attempting to shift the balance of women in tech. It's attempting to engage more women with computer science, with IT, as you call it, in general. I did find that over my tenure there for that organization, the representation of women increased a little bit. Maybe COVID was a factor that inverted this situation a bit and led to fewer women being encouraged to pursue these careers. But I believe that if we keep trying, we will eventually achieve a high representation. And it's not only about numbers. We need to find the right people with the right aptitude. And a lot of roles that are filled by men or women require commitment that is quite intense. And probably that is the reason why women choose to balance their personal lives with their careers and not to engage in such high-profile roles. Of course, it's exciting. Of course, it's incredible to be in the spotlight if you like that stuff of the, that stuff, and if you like to be seen and to be visible. But I recently spoke to someone who was an advocate and was female, and she told me that the toll that traveling took on her was very, very high. And that's why she shifted positions. So that is a factor to consider. Women need to find balance. I need to find balance. We balance personal life, family life, responsibilities, and that is not always easy, and it's not always possible with the roles that we have.
Yeah, I mean, that's where a conversation we've had a few times, obviously having a supportive family network obviously enables you to do the traveling, because traveling does take, you know, its toll over time. So I've worked away many times where obviously I've then left my wife at home with the kids, and she's having to juggle her job as well as do childcare while I'm obviously away. And obviously having the right organisation as well that supports it. I mean, we spoke recently on this, again, I spoke recently on this podcast, but as we always speak on this podcast, about it, so, it's having a organisation that is very much aware of the needs of men and women when it comes to childcare, because predominantly childcare always falls on the woman. But you also need that employer to understand that, you know, the male also needs to step up as well and help, because otherwise it's not the right balances, it's not going to work.
I see that more and more frequently in my team. When there are new children, the men step in and contribute. And that's a nice change to see. Times are changing there.
Yeah, definitely. So what's the future hold for yourself? What do you see yourself doing? Obviously, you've been at Microsoft now nearly 18 months. So what do you see yourself doing going forward?
I wonder about this myself. It's interesting to explore opportunities. For me, the culture fit is very important. And I think that in the organization that I have, there are opportunities to grow into that culture fit. But career growth is also important. So I would like to increase my network and increase my support system and develop my skills, and then see what's next. I would embrace change, because with growth mindset comes change. And Microsoft provides many, many opportunities to work with innovation. And I like to be at the forefront. I like to work with future and emerging technologies. I enjoy working with people. I enjoy growing my skills. And I believe that with the right attitude, there are many opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so having the right attitude is definitely one of the first things that you need. Fitting into the culture is, yeah, another big tick that you need. Because, say, you could literally have all the certifications in the world, but if you're not the right person that fits in to the culture, the style, get on with your future co-workers, then you're not going to be a success. Because you spend more time at work than you do at home, basically. You need to make sure... Yeah, you're happy at work, otherwise, yeah, your home life and everything else gets impacted, and that's when you then start looking at, you know, mental health, well-being, which obviously are key factors in people's general balance.
Microsoft has been very good in encouraging employees to take care of their mental health and to engage more in a face-to-face activities, to come back to the office so that we can do some team building face-to-face,
yeah.
And this has been a very positive move.
Awesome. So I'm asking like a twofold kind of question now. So in your working career, what's one of the biggest challenges that you've basically faced, and then how have you then handled that challenge to basically come to a resolution?
I face daily challenges, Andrew.
What's the biggest one that you was it a, you know, a real struggle for yourself, but obviously then you got to a resolution.
I transitioned from a very technical role, which was very research focused on a product that was very much like ChatGPT, but in a very narrow domain in automotive, to people management. And the product, which had a different scope, a different underlying technology, and a different target customer group. And for me, the challenge is on a longer term timeline, finding my feet, because I believe in change, and change is great, but it takes some time to adapt. And I have been at Microsoft exactly 13 months and a bit, so not quite 18 months yet, and it has been very dynamic. The challenge for me is to keep my people happy in my current role and engaged and well-balanced, while still managing to meet the deadlines, which are quite tight, and our targets are quite ambitious. This has always been my challenge, just not in quite as intensive way. And yes, I recognize that it is an interesting adventure. It's something to aspire to. If we can deliver, for example, right now we have a target to deliver within a month, that would be great. It will be a great teamwork achievement.
Okay. And the other question part of that is, what is the biggest highlight you've had in your career so far?
Every day is a highlight. I don't measure, actually, highlights, because I enjoy my work. I love working. I'm a bit of a workaholic. So as they say, if you love your work, you'll never do work a day of work in your life. You're probably familiar with that quote.
Okay, cool.
The slight rephrasing is, you will actually work all the time. So my highlights have been engaging with big organizations. I have worked for the European Commission as an evaluator on a few programs. I was on the advisory group for Marie Curie fellowships, which was a very interesting role because it encouraged mobility of scientists. And the focus was on enabling female scientists to engage in that initiative. My next highlight, of course, was working for Microsoft. Of course, when I first went to Seattle in 2001, I saw that Microsoft was advertising itself on billboards, and it said, you don't have to be the best and the brightest software engineer to work for us, just the best and the brightest. And at that time, 22 years ago, I didn't think I would fit, but I have always wanted to work for Microsoft because it's a company which has a stellar reputation.
Yeah, and I have to say, when you go to Seattle, it is that the campus is so amazing. It really is. Just the facilities they have on site to look after their staff is just, you know, the best I've ever seen.
Definitely.
So I've got one final question I'm going to throw in there. So what piece of advice would you give to a younger version of yourself who's just basically starting out in her career?
It's very difficult to bridge your current self to your earlier self because hindsight is always 20/20. So the standard advice is, of course, don't give up or keep going or anything that may be encouraging. But for me, it has been an adventure and it has been a challenge to find the balance. So the younger version of myself, I would have advice to look for a more balanced way to work and live and organize for life. This is important because emotional, physical, financial, social well-being, these are all factors that contribute to our lives. So look for balance.
Yeah, balance is definitely a very important thing to have. I agree. So, I think we're coming towards the end of our usual allotted time. So, Lillian, obviously, thank you for joining me today. So, normally I am joined by my other two co-hosts, or at least one of them. But today you just had the pleasure of me. Before I wrap up this episode, I would like to say that the Spotlight podcast has been selected again to speak at the Safe Coast Summit. So anyone that's listening to this podcast and is looking at attending the Safe Coast Summit, please do come and check out our session. We're going to be doing another fantastic panel discussion talking about change and how we can obviously, you know, implement more women in tech, more women tech support into businesses. I mean, I'm going to talk about the things that I'm doing in Fujitsu. And also, I'll put links into the description notes. On the 1st of September, please vote for us as one of the best podcasts on the UK Community Awards. It'd be nice to have a little trophy to sit in the office. Because John keeps going on about he's winning all these different quizzes. So I'd like to have the trophy in my office of us being the best podcast, not going to show that off. But yeah. Lillian's, thank you today for joining me, and hopefully we will cross paths in the very near future, because that generally does happen in the world of IT, because it's so lustrous and people just end up moving around.
Thank you, Andrew. You have been a fantastic host.
Thank you very much. So everyone else, thank you for listening, and I will see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. Please make sure you hit that like, share and subscribe button to help us promote our message. You can also follow us on Twitter at MSFT Spotlight, and we're also on LinkedIn, the Microsoft Spotlight podcast. And finally, we'd like to tell you a little bit about BitTitan and thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Remote migrations start here. Let MigrationWiz do the work for you. It's fast, secure, and 100% SaaS, which means you can migrate at any time and from anywhere. Migrate mailboxes, documents, public folders, personal archives, or even Microsoft Teams with just a few clicks. No special training needed, and no customer downtime. When the work matters, choose MigrationWiz.